Okay, Jam, on today's episode, we're going to revisit some listener questions. We're going to talk again about Breville shampoo.
Okay.
We're going to talk about cinnamon. We're going to talk about what we can do with petroleum waste and all kinds of other great questions from our listeners.
Nice. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Hey, I'm Melissa.
I'm Jam.
And I'm a chemist.
And I'm not.
And welcome to Chemistry for Your Life,
the podcast to help you understand the chemistry of your everyday life.
Bonus edition. That's so fun. I don't know why. It's so dumb, but I like it. All right. So today we've got questions from our listeners.
And I believe all these came. So traditionally, we always say at the end of the episode, send the questions through our email. We have people send them every which way, though. This time, these are all through our website that goes to our email, which is the way we prefer. So,
yeah,
big props to these folks who went to our website, filled out the thing, sent it to us, and then we were able to organize the questions and makes it easier for Melissa when she's getting them ready. So,
and it makes it easier for you to get credit.
Yes, for us to remember who it was who asked it. So, yeah.
All right.
Okay. This first one is from Fletcher C, who we've heard from, but it's been a little while, I think.
Yeah.
He's asked questions before and sent us feedback and stuff like that.
Fletcher said, hey again, Fletcher. What's up? What's up?
What's up? What's up, Fletch?
What if he hates that?
Or she?
I guess I don't know.
That's actually a really good question. I hope Fletcher does not mind, but if you do, let me know. if I love the movie Fletch from the 80s, and so... If it were me, I would be like, yes, calling Fletch all day. But I'll do whatever you say. Hi, guys. I just listened to the Q&R episode about purple hair shampoo, and I think you got it wrong. Your hair is absorbing everything but the yellow tones off light, and the shampoo absorbs the yellow tones of light. Oh, they're of light. Then no light will be released for our eyes to see. The hair shampoo would have to reflect all tones of light. I haven't looked into this, but I feel it would have to be that way. Love your podcast.
Okay, that made sense. And So I want to say, I think light is one of those things and colors that I tend to get kind of jumbled up on. Mm-hmm. So I totally appreciate this feedback. I think it's really helpful. So let me try to reiterate it in a different way. Okay. So if everything but yellow is being absorbed and yellow is what's reflected back, we'll see yellow.
Right.
So my favorite example of this is plants. Plants absorb light. Green plants absorb light everywhere but green. Mm-hmm. And so what we see is green. Ooh. Sorry. it's nighttime when we're recording. So the same thing can happen in your hair. Everything but yellow could be absorbed. You'll see the yellow reflected back, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think a better way to think about this is then the purple shampoo reflects back the purple. So everything is absorbed but the purple. So you're kind of maybe layering it instead, where instead of saying like, okay, so then everything is absorbed. Instead, we're layering two things on top of each other where all that's showing through on this one is yellow, all that's showing through on that one is purple. And when you overlay yellow and the purple, they're on opposite sides, of the spectrum, and they kind of cancel each other out. And that's why we get the ashy color, or the almost white looking color. So you could say, by reflecting back yellow and purple, we're covering both sides of the spectrum, and it seems like all the light is being reflected back, and that's why it looks white to us. So I think that's probably a better way to think about it and say it.
One thing I remember, and this is different than the spectrum, but in the color wheel, which we'd use in art, is actually orange and purple that were opposite.
Oh, interesting.
So then I'm wondering if it's trying to get the brassy. Just layering over, and it's able to somehow, maybe depending on the hue of purple they pick, whatever.
Right.
Able to cancel out the brass.
Yeah.
Maybe that if it's doing it correctly and it's well made or whatever, maybe it's helping cancel out the brass but let the yellow through.
Maybe. But I think it's supposed to try to be A lot of times they'll use purple shampoo to minimize the yellow and try to make it a little like whiter, right?
Well, mine's the opposite. It's trying to make it not brassy and make it be yellower.
I thought brassy was yellowness.
Brassy is like brass looking, like a kind of orangey metal, like bronze, but I guess less.
I was thinking of the white platinum-y blonde that's trying to get rid of all the yellow color and make it almost look white.
Interesting.
But I will say that Formulate, who is a partner with our show, has a chemist who works for them formulating shampoo. And they have a very in-depth page about all the, like, goes very back to color theory and talks about that, how purple shampoo works. So we can link to that as well.
Nice.
But I think the basic idea is it absorbs everything but the color that you want to shine through. So it just cancels out. The purple cancels out.
Yeah, okay, got it.
With the color you don't want. But, you know, I'm not a hair person or a blonde person, so I guess I interpreted brassy and yellow to be the same.
And I only have used the Formulate Purple one, and that's just what I remember there's saying, but I haven't used all of them, and I don't even,
You know what? Also, I would love to learn more about hair chemistry in general, because I listened to some creators on TikTok that do hair, and they talked about the reason that red hair bleeds out fastest is because the molecules are larger, and so it's harder for them to like work into the pores, the pigment molecules. And I was like, is that true? I have no way of knowing. I have no reason to doubt them, but that's fascinating. And so I think there's probably a lot about color theory and chemistry that there's more to learn about.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be interesting.
So, but I do agree with Fletcher that for things to look white, all the light needs to be reflected back.
Yep.
But it could be what you said. If you maybe you're trying to make it look yellower, then you're just trying to cancel out just the orangey part.
Yeah, it's just funny because I remember I read about that so long ago when I was formulating my own, when I was like doing the questions at the beginning or whatever. And so it's been a long time since I've like actually had to read about that. But what I retained was something about how it can look on the slightly browner, oranger kind of side. And some of that could be, who knows what is happening to your hair or whatever. But that what they were trying to do is cancel that out so it looks blonder and it's not. But they didn't say anything about why. It was more like looking less brown, I guess.
Yeah.
If your hair has kind of gotten dirty, like a dirtier that blonde. So at least in the thing I filled out, and maybe it might differ between the shampoos they're doing for different people. And when you say what color your hair is, they may be doing a different.
And what color you want, if you're like getting it done at a salon, like a platinum blonde might need something different than like a warm blonde.
Exactly. And I filled mine out obviously based on my own, what my color is. And I sent them pictures of my hair. So they were basing it off of this specific head of hair right here.
But either way, it deposits purple molecules, which cancels something out.
Yeah, and I was hoping, I was like, I really want purple hair, but it didn't work, so I don't know.
I guess we're just going to have to take you to the salon.
Yep.
Okay.
All right, this next question is from Julie K. I listened to the episode about dissolving, and something Jam said about there being way more water than sugar made me think of a question. If you drop a tiny amount of water in a lot of sugar, would the sugar be the solvent and dissolve the water? I'm a chemistry teacher, and I asked my colleagues who all said no, but they weren't able to give me a satisfactory reason why.
I love this question.
Their reasoning amounted to saying that solids can't be a solvent, but that doesn't jive my understanding that dissolving is when the solvent molecules surround the solute molecules / ions.
I agree with that.
Then when I tried looking this up, I could only find textbooks referencing one example of a solid solvent and a liquid solute. Dental fillings where mercury is dissolved in a powdered solvent. What are your thoughts?
Okay, this is a great, fun thought experiment for me and Julie. I also love the like, oh, I went and asked all my colleagues.
Yeah.
So my thought initially is often when you think of like, oh, sugar is dissolved in water, there's way more water than sugar. and the sugar disappears, right? Like mm-hmm. you can't see it anymore. It's like each sugar molecule is completely surrounded by water.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me to imagine sugar doing that same thing to water.
Mm.
And part of that is because if you say drop water in sugar, that sugar changes. Like if I have wet fingers and I drip my wet fingers into a bowl of sugar,
mm-hmm.
you can see where the water landed.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like the sugar takes away the water.
And hides it.
And hides it.
Yeah.
And so it like, and it seems like it fundamentally changes that little section of sugar. Like the water molecules are still almost trying to surround
mm-hmm.
the sugar to me.
Right. They're not like, they're not dispersing themselves throughout
the sugar. Yeah. 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 Huh. So that makes me think that it would be very hard for a solvent to be not liquid.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't look it up, but the way that the sugar doesn't surround the water molecules and it just seems like the water stays where it's put, that's my instinct of why I don't think that in that case the sugar would be the solvent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting.
That is interesting. It was a fun thought experiment.
Also, I guess this wouldn't actually answer the question, but what I think would happen, if you waited a little bit, is that that water would evaporate.
Yeah, but that could happen.
Right.
I don't know if that matters, right?
But I'm just saying, like, it doesn't really get into it and then, like, stay in some sort of way.
Mm.
You know? Like, I don't think we're really actually...
Oh, like holding. You're saying, like, oh, the sugar could dissolve. The sugar wouldn't dissolve and go away.
Right.
But it does with gas, and gas can mm-hmm. be dissolved. Mm-hmm. Gas can be a solute, and it will bubble yeah. up. Carbon dioxide will.
I was thinking, like, if someone was dropping droplets of water on some sugar, left and came back, and they were thinking, I think it.
Oh.
And I'm like, I think it actually didn't. I think it. Right there on the surface.
Yeah.
And then went away.
Yeah. It's not right. like it's getting hidden in there. Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. I agree.
I was just trying to think of like.
I mean, sugar though can take on humidity, but then it like hardens and gets weird.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes me think. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We all get a little weird when it's humid. I will say that.
Honestly.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a fun thought experiment, but I still feel like no.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with your colleagues, even though I can't give a satisfactory reason.
Yeah.
So, but I do think it is hard for if a solute is supposed to completely be surrounded by the solvent, the solid doesn't have enough motion to achieve that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my, I thought that was fun though. Yeah. And we'd love to hear what else your colleagues came up with.
Yeah. Very interesting question. Is Audrey's the next one? It looks like it was part of the.
Yes, all of that's Audrey.
Oh, all of that's Audrey. Okay, got it. Very cool. These next things, should we do them one at a time?
Sure.
Okay. Well, these are two from Audrey. We'll do one and then the other. I was so excited that you did a cinnamon episode because I was just drinking a latte the other day with cinnamon on top. I've noticed cinnamon does not dissolve very well into drinks, which surprises me because water has both a polar and nonpolar end. So what prohibits cinnamon from interacting with water even when it's hot? I even noticed that the cinnamon sort of collected into small clusters on the surface. When I lightly blew on it, the cinnamon seemed to roll across the surface rather than mix in.
This is a great question. I will say one thing. I think when Audrey said that water has a non-polar and polar end, I think Audrey meant cinnamon does because water is just polar.
Right,
but cinnamon does have a polar and a non-polar end, but I think such a large part of the cinnamon molecule is non-polar that it ends up... Oh, sorry. Nighttime recording. That it ends up being to where it has a larger nonpolar part that does not want to interact with water because water is just polar.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, cinnamon's hydrophobic. Cinnamon has enough non-polarity that it does not want to interact with water. Mm-hmm. And there's like videos where people put like cinnamon all on top of like water and then stick their finger in and their finger comes out dry. Have you ever seen that?
No, that's weird.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Huh. Because your finger gets coated with cinnamon.
Oh, interesting.
So you can do some really cool tricks with cinnamon and water.
Hmm.
But yes, I love that. I love you looking at that and wondering about that. And I also love cinnamon on lattes.
Mm. Ready for the next one?
Yeah.
Okay, Audrey's next one is, this is more of a niche question, but I received a storm cloud weather predictor for Christmas. Never heard of this. That sounds cool.
Okay.
It's just a cute little decoration for my desk, but it's supposed to predict the actual weather. It's basically a glass cloud with some sort of liquid inside that can form cloud-like crystals. You might need to Google it to have a better understanding of what it is. Essentially, I'm wondering, how does it work? I doubt it's very accurate, but I'd still love to know the science behind it.
Okay, everybody now can pause and go quickly look these up.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a picture I'm showing Jim.
Oh.
And here's the thing. I agree with Audrey. I think that these are not accurate. I think that they are just going to probably only react to the weather in your office. And I've read reviews from others who said the same thing. But basically, the only thing I could think is if the pressure is changing, it wouldn't change inside this sealed vessel, I don't think. And so the only thing that I think would change would be the temperature.
Right.
But your office is probably controlled. So I have low confidence in it. Mm-hmm. But who's to say? Maybe there's something that, you know, that I don't, but I'm guessing probably not.
Hmm.
That's my only thought.
Yeah,
it is
crazy.
But it is cute.
Yeah, that seems cool.
It is cute.
I guess what would be kind of cool is if you like put it right by a window or something like that, and then it was kind of picking up on some of the changes.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
You know, because like there'd be like some subtle changes, but it might be enough to like tell you a little.
Yeah, if it was sunnier. Oh, that's a great point. If it was sunnier, it would be heating it up more, even mm-hmm. even if then it's just a hot day
mm-hmm.
versus a cloudy, same temperature day. It would be getting less energy mm-hmm. from the sun. That's true. Mm-hmm. And if it is colder, a lot of times those windows are colder. Mm-hmm. That's a great point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so putting it right on a windowsill might actually give you a better predictor of the weather.
Otherwise, I'm like, yeah, it would be the same as just the office you're in or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But that is at least like a, you know, I remember sometimes when I had we worked in a building and it was like a little ways for me to get out of the building when I had an office in Plano. And so I would sometimes just go put my hand on the window to see like, okay, did it warm up outside at all? Like, and winters in Texas is kind of tough because like sometimes it can kind of look sunny outside, but it's actually cold.
Or the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Cloudy and hot.
Yep, exactly. So anyway, okay. Next question is from Cameron S.
Wait, I wanted to shout out Audrey.
Oh,
also
sorry.
Told us that she had a job interview with the FDA, I think.
Mm.
No, the EPA as a groundwater specialist.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a question about chemistry that she was able to answer because of the podcast.
Nice.
And guess what? She got the job.
Nice.
So now we have an in with the EPA. Congratulations, Audrey, on getting that job. I'm so excited for you. I know you really wanted it.
And thank you for your service.
Yeah, thank you for working for the EPA.
Protecting that environment. We need it.
Give us the hot goss on PFAS.
Yes, please do.
Great.
Okay, next question. Cameron S. Industrial coal ash and petroleum waste. From a chemistry aspect, what if we stored coal ash in depleted mines instead of what we do with it now? Landfills here in Tennessee, apparently where Cameron lives. Is there any way to pump petroleum waste back into these empty deposits? I've always wondered, why not put all this plastic in those? I know extracting all of this from the ground has to affect the Earth's natural chemistry in some way. Shouldn't we at least put something back in it, even if it's just a byproduct?
I think that that's a great question. I do think there would be many unanticipated consequences so I'll just start from the beginning. So I think what Cameron here is saying is, hey, we took all the petroleum out of the ground. We turned it into plastic. So why can't we just put the plastic waste back in the ground and it would be fine.
Mm.
And I think it's because we messed with it too much.
Yep.
And so now we wouldn't be putting petroleum back in the ground. We'd be putting petroleum that we have polymerized into plastics that are very hard to biodegrade back into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And the closest thing they do to biodegrade is become microplastics, which I do think we need to have an episode on microplastics. But I know someone who knows someone who's an expert in microplastics, so that kind of makes me want to talk to them. I know.
That's
so
cool.
That's why I've been avoiding it.
Yep.
But all that to say is I think that it would have some negative consequences. Now, mm-hmm. I don't know the same with coal ash, but one thought I had about that is like, okay, so I was doing some research on composting, spoiler alert, and a lot of methane gas is released in composting. If you can harness it and put it back where it goes to be used as like a natural gas and things that are useful, that's great. But it takes work to do that. Mm-hmm. And so with coal ash, which I think has been less impacted by human interference, we'd have to have the infrastructure and the funds and the motivation to put it back.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think people are very motivated to do that right now. I mean, I just think a lot of things just have this mindset of like, oh, it's just easier to throw it away. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to do that. And that's why I think things end up in landfills. It's cheaper and it's easier. And unfortunately, I think we're motivated primarily by money, which is why, you know, recycling in the first place is hard to do because it's cheaper to make virgin plastic than to recycle plastic. And right. So... I got a little soapboxy there, but all that to say, I think putting the plastic back could have negative side effects that we may not have thought about. But I think with the ash, I don't have really good answers, but I feel like it's probably not motivated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we lack motivation.
Right.
So those are my thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Money, what is it? Like money runs all, or there's something like that. Money, basically money is like king and motivates, and we don't probably have enough of it to motivate people to put the earth back the way it goes. I did listen to a really funny episode of a podcast called Tooth and Claw where they were talking about polar bears who are the polar bears right now are kind of doing fine, but as sea ice melts, which the polar bears rely on to hunt, they're having to fast for longer and longer, which they're still alive, and so it's fine. But there will be a point at which there's not enough ice anymore for some populations of polar bears to survive. And then, like, they'll all probably die. Instead of, like, some populations that are slowly declining, the analogy that this person used was it's like all the polar bears are fine, just like the Titanic was, until it hit the iceberg and sank. And so, like, all the polar bears are going to be doing fine until we reach this critical point where they can't survive without the sea ice, and the whole population dies off kind of at once.
Yep.
And so then they're talking about ways to restore the sea ice and, like, all these suggestions that people had. And some of them were, like, just dump a bunch of really cold ice already into the, it was just kind of ridiculous. And so that this gave the vibe. There was a few that were good. I don't remember what they were. Some of them were bad, like paint the tops of the mountains white so they reflect the sun back into the sky. I'm like, I don't think that's going to work the way you think it will.
Yeah.
Or like put a huge insulation blanket over the whole Antarctic, things like that. There's some really good ones. I can't remember what they are, but this reminded me of that. It's like, these are really, there are good ideas, but we'd have to, you know, do something about it.
Right.
So,
right.
And I just don't know who's motivated to fund those, but they were good thoughts, Cameron.
Yeah. And I've never thought about that at all. So like, seems viable to me. It's like, I'm into it. These questions are these reviews we got.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I wanted to finish up with some, this Devin emailed us, and then we also got a review from Linz on Apple Podcasts. And I like to shout out those positive reviews because they mean so much to us.
Did you take Devin's or Linz?
I'll do Devin's.
All right, go for it.
So Devin emailed us and just said, absolutely love your podcast. Not only are y'all lovely to listen in the background, but also very indulging and makes me think. I wish the world had more people who cared about discussing science, and I was wondering if there's any recommendations you can give to soon-to-be chemistry scholar.
Mm.
With much love, Devin L. So I don't know what recommendations he meant, like, you know, study hard or whatever, but
yeah.
I'll say about people who love discussing science, that podcast I was just talking about, Tooth and Claw, is a pretty good one. Sometimes they can be a little crass because it's some brothers, you know, mm. and sometimes boys...
Tooth and Claw, that's the brothers. I see. That makes sense. I didn't realize those are their names. That makes a lot of sense now. I don't understand it.
Yeah, so, yeah. But it's that, and it's about human animal conflict. So sometimes it can be a little dark, but I've learned so much about wildlife biology. That's been really interesting. There's also a podcast called Going Wild with Ray Wynn Grant that's about biology. That's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also like Ologies, which is a podcast that features scientists that talk about their work. And so, yeah, those are just some. Ones that come right to my mind.
Nice.
I don't know if there's other... Oh, as you learn more about chemistry, there is one from Chemistry World that I like. It's like 5 minutes and they go in depth on different molecules, but I think those are less for like intro to chemistry and they're much more like... I think they're easier to follow the deeper you go. I mean, you could probably get something out of it, but sometimes they're a little jargon heavy.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Thanks, Devin.
This next one is from Lynn's... I cannot get enough of this podcast. I'm binging past episodes right now and instantly knew it was exactly what I've been looking for.
So sweet.
My kids constantly ask me questions about science, chemistry, and how stuff works, and it always inspires me to look up the answers because either I'm unsure or I've forgotten over the many years since I've been out of school. This podcast refreshes all the things I learned in college and in some cases teaches me something brand new. Well, it explains things brilliantly. It's easy to understand, but very in-depth all at once.
So yep. Nice.
Yes, very much so. It helps me explain the wonderful world of chemistry to my curious little ones. Sometimes even helps with their homework and without having to consult YouTube or Google first. Jam adds life and a refreshing curiosity to the show with his thought-provoking questions and helpful analogies. You want to fill your mind with knowledge to help you understand the science behind everyday stuff. This podcast for you. Wow.
Isn't that so nice?
So nice.
That's like exactly what we hope for when we make this podcast.
Yeah, and we share these not just because we're tooting our horns. We're like, it's just honestly grateful. We're grateful to hear encouraging things like this because, you know, we make this show and we do a bunch of other things in our life too. And then we squeeze in time to do this. And it really is so, so nice to hear that for some people, and we know this is not everyone's cup of tea, not everyone's looking for a chemistry podcast for people who are looking for it and who have been really helped by it, it really, really is encouraging to us. So Devin and Linz, thank y'all so much for your very kind words.
Yeah. And it can sometimes just be hard to put yourself out there, right? Like it's scary to make content and hope it's beneficial to people. But whenever we can hear positive things from our listeners and know that we've impacted people, it really is encouraging. Like it puts courage in for us to keep going. And that means a lot to us. And so
100%. Thanks. Yes, thank y'all so much.
Well, I think that wraps us up. So shall I shout out all of our patrons for the awesome work that they do to help keep this podcast going?
Let's do it. First, I'll say, if you have a question or a thought or a comment or a feedback or whatever, you can send it to us on our website at chemforyourlife.com. That's chem, F-O-R, yourlife.com to share your thoughts and ideas, feedback, comments, questions, whatever. And if you'd like to help us keep our show going and contribute to cover the cost of making it, you can do that by joining our super cool chem community of patrons on patreon.com/chemforyourlife. That's patreon.com/chemforyourlife. If you're not able to do that, you can still help us by subscribing in for your podcast app, rating, writing, review on Apple Podcasts like Linz did, or subscribing on our YouTube channel. Those things help us to keep chemistry, share with even more people and to be discovered by people, all that kind of stuff. So thanks for doing that.
This episode of Chemistry for Your Life was created by Melissa Collini and Jam Robinson. Jam Robinson is our producer, and this episode was made possible by our super cool community of patrons who support us on Patreon. And seriously, thank you all so much for making it possible for listeners like those that you've just heard from in our reviews, Linz and Devin, to learn chemistry. And I'm going to shout out those supporters. They are... John T., our newest Patreon supporter, Avishai B., Brie M., Brian K., Carol R., Chris and Claire S., Chelsea B., oh, shout out, it's almost Claire's birthday. Happy birthday, Claire.
Ooh.
Chelsea B, Derek L, Elizabeth P, Emerson W, Hunter R, Jacob T, Christina G, Katrina H, Latila S, Lynn S, Melissa P, Nicole C, Rachel R, Sarah M, Stephen B, Shadow, Suzanne P, Timothy P, Venus R, Radioactive Dreams, Cullen R, and Jeanette N. Thank you all so much for making Chemistry of Your Life happen.
Yay, chemistry.
Yay, questions. Yay, website submission.